Jewish forced labor and the armaments industry. Gerlewerk of Zeiss Econ AG.
Ideology has always won against economic needs, rational considerations, and the kind of rational thinking which is aligned towards self-preservation. That, according to Moshe Pastone, is the reason why in the last years of the war, as the German Wehrmacht was being overrun by the Red Army, a significant proportion of rail traffic was being devoted to transporting Jews to the gas chambers and not to providing logistical support for the army. The Gölewerk was part of Zeiss Econ AG. It was set up in 1940-41, having been planned as a munitions factory from the outset. This was shown by its architectural style, typical for the late 30s. The concrete industrial buildings with their small windows and reinforced stairwells were intended to be bomb-proof. On the other hand, the Gölewerk was the scene of large-scale deployment of women as unskilled or semi-skilled forced labor, including Jewish women from Dresden until they were deported, and finally female prisoners from Flossenbürg concentration camp. Among other things, the Gölewerk produced time fuses for torpedoes and bomb-aiming devices. Those employed in the armaments industry were, by and large, exempted from the first wave of deportation of Jews from Dresden to Riga, which took place on January 21, 1942. This was the result of a dispute between the Saxon Gauleiter Mutschmann, the armaments authorities, and the Gölewerk about the deportation of workers from the so-called Jewish department. Gauleiter Mutschmann had demanded the removal from his district of all Jews, even those who were working in vital armaments production, so that the Reich Ministry for Armaments and Munitions stepped in, fearing production losses. Based on a compromise negotiated at the last minute, some 400 of the forced laborers at the Gölewerk were not deported.
Yesterday, dramatic reversal in the evacuation business. The first news reached the Jews' house in the afternoon. There had been a fierce argument between the party on the one hand, the company and the army on the other. Many hours of negotiations, a threat to close the factory to appeal to Göring should the Jewish section be touched. Victor Klemperer, to the bitter end. The Diaries of Victor Klemperer, 1942 to 1945.
This dispute was part of a struggle being waged throughout the Reich about the Jews working in the armaments industry. The quarrel was between the employment officers, who couldn't get enough foreign forced labor to stop the gaps in armaments-related industries, and the Gestapo, which insisted on indiscriminate deportation. Rudolf Höss, the commandant of Auschwitz concentration and extermination camp, wrote after the war that the Reichssicherheitshauptamt had always been in favor of the complete elimination of all Jews. He viewed each new labor camp, each new thousand workers, as bringing with it the danger of liberation, of people remaining alive through some circumstance or other. Oswald Pohl, head of the SS Department for Economics and Administration, had the conflicting task of ensuring that as many prisoners as possible were deployed in the production of armaments.
In July 1941, I was made to work in forced labor in Dresden and sent to Zeiss Econ's Gölewerk. We lived 7 kilometers away from the factory, and at first I was still allowed to travel there by tram, although not inside the tram, but standing outside on the platform. At Zeiss Econ there was a so-called Jewish department with approximately 300 people. Beside myself there were very many other young people. So that people called us the Kindergarten, a name which I rediscovered many years later in the Diaries of Victor Klemperer. Klemperer wrote about us on May 3, 1942. At Zeiss Econ, there's a kindergarten in the Jews section. Jobs that have to be done with a magnifying glass by very young eyes. Girls of 15 and 16 work there. Protection of young people has been expressly annulled for Jews. Last week, these children had to work day and night shifts so that they were working 24 hours out of 48. They are paid 27 pfennigs an hour. We worked non-stop, producing time fuses and clockwork mechanisms for submarines. The work required great concentration, dexterity, and a good eye. My eye suffered a lot from having to perform this precision work since we had to work in artificial light, using magnifying glasses and pincers for hours every day without a break. At the same time as us, there was a shift of non-Jewish workers with whom we, however, were not allowed to have any contact. Even on the stairs, there were bars to prevent any contact. Things got particularly bad when we were no longer allowed to travel by tram anymore. At first, they still let us use a tram, specially painted yellow, which took the Jewish slave laborers from a central location to the Gulewerk. It departed each morning at 5:30. At the same stop, there were other workers waiting for their tram. Some were still quite sleepy and wanted to get on our tram. The driver called out, "Get out! This is the Jewish tram!" Whereupon they became outraged. "What? The Jews have a tram of their own, and ours hasn't come yet." As we got on, they swore at us and threatened us, as if we had ordered a tram of our own. A new law came out in March 1942. Jews were not allowed to travel by tram at all unless they lived more than 7 kilometers away from their place of work. We lived exactly 7 kilometers away and were therefore not allowed to use the tram anymore. So I cycled to work. But then they said, Jews must hand in all their bicycles. That meant I had to cover the 7 kilometers on foot. The shift began at 6 o'clock, so I had to get up at 4 o'clock and start from home at 4:30. We had neither proper clothing nor the right shoes. We often arrived at the factory completely soaked. Sometimes, after walking 7 kilometers at 5 in the morning, even my eyelashes were iced up. However, none of that was quite so bad as long as it was dark. The way home was worse. It was bright and everyone who wore the star was afraid of it. Henny Brenner, das Lied ist aus.
Zeiss Icon AG wanted to achieve a 100% utilization of the Jewish labor. It therefore strove to have them interned in centralized barracks close to the factory. The fact that this meant they would be isolated from the so-called Aryan population and could be easily kept under surveillance lay in the interests of the Gestapo. In addition, the Gestapo also wished to be able to claim as soon as possible that the city of Dresden was free of Jews. Zeiss Icon AG made its materials store available. This was located on Dr. Todtstraße, today's Radeburger Straße, and thus outside Dresden's city borders. Once all the Jews still living in Dresden had been moved to the so-called Hellerberg transit camp, the city of Dresden was for all intents and purposes practically free of Jews. The case shows how the dispute between economy and ideology was settled at short notice. Almost all the Jewish people forced to work at the Gulewerk were deported to Auschwitz in March 1943. They were presumably replaced by foreign forced labor. The will to totally exterminate claimed absolute priority.
The greater the prospects of victory, wrote historian Ulrich Herbert, the more radical was the implementation of ideological goals. The worse the war situation became, the greater were the concessions made to economic considerations. Accordingly, as the situation came to a heat in the years 1944 and 45, a number of substantial ideological goals were temporarily abandoned, including that of a so-called Jew-free Reich. As a result, in order to maintain the capacity of the armaments and aircraft industry, over 100,000 Hungarian Jews were transported to Germany as forced laborers, in addition to other concentration camp prisoners from the areas to the east of the German Reich. Towards the end of 1944, after the majority of Dresden's Jewish citizens had been transported to their death, transports brought about 5,000 Jewish concentration camp prisoners to Dresden. They were put to work in 10 sub-camps, which were under the authority of Flossenbürg concentration camp. The prisoners were deployed at the Göhlewerk and other armaments plants. The Bernstorff & Co. sub-camp was established when over 500 prisoners were transferred to the cigarette factory in Dresden-Striesen at Schandauer Street 68. The prisoners, all of them Jewish, came from Eastern Europe, and many had spent several years working for German munition factories in the ghetto Litzmannstadt. The prisoners came to Bernstorff & Co. in Dresden via the concentration camps at Auschwitz and Stutthof, near Gdansk. They were made to work 12-hour shifts producing shell cores and ammunition. They were housed in the upper story of the factory. Until the Allied air raids on Dresden on February 13, 1945, at least 16 people died of malnutrition or disease at Bernstorff & Co. During the air raids, the prisoners were made to remain locked up in their accommodation so that several prisoners were killed in the bombing and fires. The sub-camp was dissolved in the middle of April 1945. Guarded by the Dresden SS, the prisoners were marched to Theresienstadt.
There, on May 8th, American troops freed the survivors of the death march.
From the interrogation records in the German Federal Archives, Ludwigsburg Office, Central Office of the State Justice Administration for the Investigation of National Socialist Crimes, Ludwigsburg. Joseph B. I was taken to the forced labor camp at Dresden-Bernstorff at the beginning of December 1944 as part of a closed unit made up of experts together with their families and totaling some 500 people. After part of our group was separated out and transported to Auschwitz and after their number had been made up by other prisoners who were fit enough to work, we were sent to Dresden. At the former cigarette factory in Schandauer Straße 68, we restored the machine park and started up production. Our camp was a sub-camp of Flossenbürg concentration camp. The production was directed by the engineers Obschat and Brandt. The SS guards were organized in watches of 10 to 12 people, including women, under the command of Flossenbürg concentration camp. As far as I remember, there were three SS camp directors in succession. I can only remember the name of the third one, Oberscharführer Schmerse, who was the most terrible of the lot. The march, which ended in Theresienstadt at the beginning of May 1945, was very hard. We had losses. About 8 to 10 fellow sufferers died of hunger and exhaustion. The SS guards accompanying the march had our ration cards. We watched as they lifted up the goods which were meant for us. We exhausted prisoners had to drag the goods along, but Schmerz would not allow them to distribute them to us.
At first, the criminal investigations were carried out by the Central Office of the State Justice Administration in Ludwigsburg. Later, by the Public Prosecutor's Office in Zweibrücken. They were closed without having achieved a result.